We're back. What's up? Javier Jase, Argentinian action figure numero uno. How are you, sir? Welcome to Cannabis Insider.
Mr. Elliot Lane, how are you doing today? Here's a question for you. It's a very summer-oriented question because it's summer here in Argentina.
It's not summer here in North Carolina.
Juice box is an adult. Yes or no? I want to hear from people in the chat.
Listen, if it makes you happy, I hope you have five a day. All right? Like, y'all, this world is too divided. It's too crazy. If you want to drink a juice box, drink a juice box. If you want to drink a juice box with THC in it, maybe you should do that. That product probably shouldn't exist. However, if you can make it exist and it makes you happy, I bid you.
I don't know if it shouldn't exist. Honestly, I'm now kind of interested in trying.
I know you are. But that being said, dude, I mean, listen, there is this one company. I'm not going to call them out by name. I've called them out by name before, but they haven't done anything recently for me to call them out by name, so I'm not going to do it. But they're literally making products, Delta 8 products, that are direct takeoffs of, like, Oreos and Cheetos.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, how are you a business? Like, how are you still making legal revenue? It blows my mind. Well, regardless, y'all, this is our last show of the year. This is it.
What? Oh, for real?
This is our last show of the year, Javi.
You got to bring the energy.
That's what I'm saying. Pick it up, Mr. Three Button. Let's do it. But y'all, welcome into Cannabis Insider. Elliot Lane, Javier Jase. We do these interviews all year round. We have an awesome guest for you today. We're kind of wrapping it up with the czar of cannabis, Lynn Ding and Lynn Tannenbaum of AFC Gamma. The czar is a fine name, right?
That's fine. It seems like he was born for this.
Yeah,
like,
I completely agree. The man does it very well. So we're going to chat with him about how he's ending the year. I think he just announced his dividends today. So that'll be something we can chat about. But that being said, just looking at capital flow in this industry with anybody of his stature, I think is going to be super pumped, super interesting, and super exciting. That being said, y'all, subscribe. Cannabis Daily Newsletter. Just drop that into any search bar. Hit that link. Subscribe. You get the best cannabis newsletter in the industry every day around 11:30, around 12. But it is awesome. We have an awesome producer, Osla, behind that. Javier and his content team get us some awesome content. But that being said, not too many plugs to start. Javier, listen, we're all waiting on something from Washington, D.C., and it's exactly what we're not getting, and we don't have to talk about it for the whole show, okay? We all understand that it's not good sentiment right now, but that being said, man, let's chat about what's happening in the industry. Let's chat about what could possibly happen before the end of the year, and I'll turn it over to you.
Shoot, what are you thinking?
What am I thinking?
Yeah.
About what's going to happen? Like, are you asking me my crystal ball?
Yeah. I mean, generally, maybe give us some context on what you're talking about in terms of...
Safe. What else would I be talking about? The lack of anything happening on Capitol Hill. But that being said, you have people now, the longer it goes, the more negative voices and pessimistic voices you get. That's how it is every other time we've introduced SAFE before, or they've introduced SAFE before. We'll see what happens, but they have till January 3rd. So that's still 2.5 weeks away, if not more, 3 weeks away.
The industry doesn't seem very optimistic. I mean, the people are doing all sorts of campaigns to rally support for SAFE, but it's not looking very promising.
The MSOs did one yesterday.
Yep.
What do you think about that? I mean, do you think it's effective? I mean, I'm glad they did it. I'll say that.
I really don't know. I mean, there's a part of me that thinks that if, you know, you garner enough attention and traction, politicians and policymakers will listen. But it also does show the level of, like, the lack of momentum that the legislation has, right? If the action that we're taking is, like, hashtags and asking the lawmakers to take action.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that being said, man, let's see what else is happening. I mean, honestly, there hasn't been a ton of public company news today. There's not a whole lot happening. I think it's kind of winding down for the year. Anything on top of your mind?
Not really. I was, you know, I was very interested in a piece of news about the Sinaloa cartel. El Chapo's son wants to go legal, basically, right? In Mexico, I think that is an interesting approach. You can check out that's the entire story on Benzinga.com/cannabis.
I love those stories that you come with, Javi. Those are awesome.
Then Silent Seeds and Stravinsky's, for those who don't know, are two very, very notable crews in the cannabis space. Stravinsky's, of course, I don't know how to say it, but like Stravinsky's created by Mario Guzman. They are launching 5 new cannabis strains together. This collaboration offers pretty exotic varieties: Polar Gelato, Pink Sunset, Acai Jelly, Polar Gelato, Auto.
Here's a general question for you, Javi. That I was talking to somebody, or he did a hot take. This is actually, he posted on Twitter, but he's a very well-known communications guy for an MSO, and he was saying unpopular take is that strain names need to be less childish, essentially, is what he said. That they need to be more normalized and not like these in order to hit a different audience, I guess. But his communications, his marketing brain, how does that hit you, that statement?
I get the point, right? It's gotten to a point where it's just like a random, very random names, and you have to be very well informed of the prior strains and how they're crossed together, figure out what, you know, which two strains they crossed. I would love to see more of a standardized nomenclature, for sure. Not indica sativa, it's something like wines, right? You go to a wine store and, you know, like Cabernet is a certain type of wine, and then Cabernet Franc is a different type, and Malbec and Sancerre, and, you know, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir and Pinot Grigio, right? And like, and then each brand, each wine is different within that category. But you do know that there's a certain category that you like, right? Or a certain category you're craving.
Yeah.
And then you can get as granular as you want, right?
Well, but, I love Sancerre, first off. But I agree. I understand that where we are, this is where we built, you know, these strains too. But for newbies coming to the space, for the soccer moms, for the, you know, the people who want to use it for focus, or, you know, if not necessarily be a part of stoner culture, it's an interesting point. You know, like, what is frozen Jesus? What does that mean?
Since you have Sancerre is a type of grape that was originally from France, and it was lost for many years, and it reappeared mysteriously in Chile. The reason why I bring this up is because it is very reminiscent of cannabis and strains, right? For a very, very long time, cannabis was legal all around the world, and people doing strains, you know, breeding and creating new strains would many times have to flee or would lose their crops, or they would get the police would find the crops or whatever. And these strains were lost, right? And there's a whole movement around recovering certain legacy strains. Just like what happened with Sancerre wine and with France and Chile. But how it appeared in Chile is so mysterious.
I'm just reading a comment in our chat. Grown Folks 502 Music. It's so early in the game. Labeling will evolve. I agree. He's got a point. That being said, who's going to evolve it? I don't think anybody's making the moves right now. Not to take away from your story there, Javi.
No, not at all.
Awesome. So with that being said, we're here to talk capital and cannabis. We're here to talk finance. And we got a great guest to do it with. So let's bring over Len Tannenbaum, co-founder of AFC Gamma, NASDAQ-listed AFCG. Welcome in, Len. Ooh, you're leaning in on us, man. You're ready to go. I'm digging it. How are you, sir? Been a bit.
All good. The end of the year. This is it. You know, the roller coaster is finally coming to a stop.
Yes. Well, for a week or two, right?
What's the balance? What is your balance of the year?
My balance?
Exactly.
What's the question, Javier?
What's the balance, Javi? Is that what you're saying?
What's the balance for the year, right? If you had to look back and go like, this was the good, the bad, and the ugly of this year, what would you?
Well, I think the good is a number of states that are really exciting for cannabis. Anyway, let's talk about cannabis. There's other good, bad, and uglies of the year, but for cannabis, the good news is some of the good states that are open up will be a lot of potential, and it shows more support for cannabis in the industry. And you saw some good legalizations come out, right? And eventually you're going to get New York stacked together. And, you know, so Connecticut, Missouri was exciting. And you know, Georgia coming into medical, huge population. So that's some of the good stuff.
Nice.
Most of it's bad and ugly, right? Because you've had too many cannabis CEOs come on with very high confidence that the SAFE Act stuff's going to actually pass, and legislation's going to pass much earlier than this. I mean, we were talking about this since March. I think, Elliot, we talked about this last time.
I'm pretty sure we did.
And, you know, I think that, you know, Schumer was a bunch of hot air. He did politics, and he played politics like he shouldn't have, by saying that he's going to get something passed in front of the election, which made the Republicans pissed off probably, because this was a bipartisan thing. And if it was going to be bipartisan and good for the industry, Schumer shouldn't have opened his mouth, made it a partisan thing. And
that's fair.
And you know, the industry screwed up also recently by trying to put that in. So that's the bad. And the ugly is you'll see bankruptcies out of at least half of the industry, if not more. You've had shut-ins. You'll have massive issues in terms of the dislocation in supply and demand. And that, it's funny, you know, because I've been saying this all year, and then finally on the last panel, I was up there with some people, and everybody agreed. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is – sorry, I shouldn't have said that, but oh, crap.
No, that's fine here.
It's, you know, it's really coming, you know, because now we're on the same page.
Can you give us a little more – I mean, you don't have to be super specific here, but a little bit more inclination about where some of this receivership is going to take place within the industry. Is it a certain sector? Is it all over the place? Is it MSOs? Is it SSOs, mom and pop shops? Like, where is it going to be hit the hardest, do you think?
Well, first of all, my heart reaches out to all of the mom and pops and small growers in California, Hoboken, and other places that really made a living at this and loved making a living at growing cannabis and was able to. And have been uprooted by, you know, lack of a lot of things that should have gone on, and it sucks for a lot of the investors that tried to invest in this. Was cannabis 2.0? Remember, 1.0 failed. This was 2.0. As we're here, there will be a 3.0. That's going to be the silver lining. We get that at the end of the show, maybe. But the 2.0 problem has to go first. You have overlevered companies. You have sale leasebacks these guys can't afford. You've got a total dislocation where you have production below marginal cost of production, which means in Arizona, for example, you know, price per pound is down to $350. California went sub 300. In fact, I saw it went to 100 to 200. Colorado, the worst states right now is, you know, California, Oregon, Washington, Colorado. Oklahoma has been a disaster for the industry. They produce 15 times what everybody in that state could smoke. And it's just... Where does all that marijuana go? It goes everywhere else because it's not being stopped, and the illicit market or the legacy market is not being regulated. And where does most of it get dumped? In New York, I think. And then you have the good states, which are keeping people a little bit alive. New Jersey's been phenomenal. Ohio, Missouri's going to kick butt. We like Connecticut's turning on well. Maryland's going to go wreck and do really, really well. Pennsylvania prices have declined, but the dispensaries are doing well. Arizona dispensaries are doing well, but prices have crushed all the production, maybe except for the best cost of production. We're seeing shut-ins across the state, shut-ins in Colorado. See tons of shut-ins in California. Will this? You know, that's the thing. It has to wash out.
What about so you look at a state like Florida as a super high cost of entry, right? Is that actually a benefit? In a way, you know, to not having such an oversupply, having so many people jump in.
So we're here in Florida. I know I have this weird green screen background, but if I took it off and showed you out the window, it would be palm trees. Like we're here in West Palm with beautiful weather and like Argentina with Javier probably. And
not me. I'll live in misery over here. It's fine.
Yeah. And it's funny. But Florida's amazing. It's a vertical market for those people that don't know, where you have to sell what you grow. So you have to do everything here. You can't sell other people's product. The illicit market, I think, is less here. If you ask me, there are a lot of dispensaries. Trulieve dominated this market for many years. The other MSOs came in and put a lot of money in. Mm-hmm. They're gaining market share. By gaining market share, it's becoming more competitive. For the first time in the past few months, price per pound is dropping fast. And so I think Florida market also is still very good price per pound, but price per pound is coming into more rational zones as less and less growth. Still medical market. We're not going to be wrecked until at least 24, which means 25. It's challenging. So I think, and you saw that in Trulieve's numbers. I get the hurricane, but Trulieve was down a whole bunch in their revenue in the last quarterly report. They were the dominant player. Kim was the dominant player up until then. So I think each state is going through a cycle and does go through a cycle. And so over time, right, the states are making mistakes here. They're issuing more and more licenses. They're diluting down the value of the license. They're diluting down the value of the entry to the market under the guise of social equity, which I think is a great idea in general. Problem is, as a capital provider, I'm not going to come in and provide capital in a state where you're going to kill the economics. So go find capital. Like, we're going to do it in states that are rational.
You were, earlier you were breaking down a little bit, some states doing it right and some states doing it wrong. Is there a common element between the states doing it right and between the states doing it wrong? Like, what is determining the good states and the bad states?
Yeah, let me clarify when I say that. Right and wrong is for who, right? Right and wrong for us. We're lenders to the industry. We don't invest in California, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, and Oklahoma. And we have one deal in Michigan, which is now unlimited. We don't like the supply and demand economics. And it turned out we were right, because these companies are massively stressed. And we do operate in the good, what I call the good states. Now, so the question is, for us, what are the good states and bad states? Look, for a consumer, California's awesome, right? You get great marijuana at a great price. So, and you get lots of strains, you have amazing, amazing companies there. You have some really great brands in California. So I'm not saying for the consumer, it's not awesome. It is. California's great. I always say, if legalization happens, there's one state that wins, it's California. Because they produce, to me, they produce some of the best marijuana in the country. That's just my belief, right? And I've smoked it. So,
and you live on the East Coast. So that's the dichotomy here. We have an East Coast resident saying California weed's the best. That's the headline of the show here, Javi.
California weed's the best. God, you don't want Florida weed's full of mold. Come on. Yeah, there was nothing you could do. It's a very, our mold regulations, I think if you're under 50% mold, you're still good to smoke this. I mean, seriously, it's just the worst state to grow weed, but that's what you have to do, right? You have legal marijuana, you have to operate, grow in the state, and keep them and sell in the state. That's how you do it legally. And so they don't have a choice. They've got to sell moldy weed. So if you go to, actually, some of the growers in Michigan do a great job. The indoor grows, I'm leaving the indoor grows out. The indoor grows, where the high-end brands are good in every state, because the indoor grows are really, they control the environment, they control their product, they control the grow. I got off track. What was your question, Elliot?
Oh, no, I was just talking about East Coast versus West Coast, getting your opinion on it. But that being said, my friend, looking at 2023, I was just a part of a panel at MJ Biz, basically on debt. And, there was a lawyer on it who was saying there will be a lot of lenders who must go in and, seize assets or basically take drastic action. Is that something that, you feel is going to be a part of your 2023? Is that something you're able to talk about? Is that something that, you think is going to unfortunately happen with some of your clients?
Oh, you know, I'll always talk to you about stuff. I don't, you know me, I'm just like, I'm an open book. You know, I can't forecast earnings if I haven't publicly forecast earnings. We're a public company, you know, and so we can't do that. But if I haven't already told the street, but I could certainly talk about vision of the industry. And there's no question that across the industry, there's going to be a lot of assets. Now, nobody wants to own, I don't want to operate anyone's assets, but we can force the sale of those assets if they need to be forced. And then they'll go up for sale. The problem is very few people have cash to buy them. The big MSOs don't have a lot of cash. And they need to, I'm very upset, by the way, on this last run before SAFE Act looks like it's petering out. The MSOS had a good bounce down, down nine today, hit over 12. I was like, I was talking to Seaport and Steve Inlow and others. I'm like, why aren't they selling stock? Like, I would be selling stock, raising cash, and getting ready for the distressed environment. And I hope they did. I can't tell you what they did or didn't. I'm not in their shoes. But I hope a bunch of cash was built up. Somebody's going to have to buy these assets. And they're going to go at 50 cents on the dollar. What I will tell you, and this is back to the Cannabis 3.0, is there is a number of funds that we're talking to that are starting to put together real cash. I mean, hundreds of millions, not like 5 million, 10 million, to get ready for what's going to come, where you have over-levered companies with sale-leasebacks they can't afford, with G&A that doesn't make sense, that need to sell and liquidate. So it's coming.
Wow.
Will we take over a company in 23? God, I hope not. We try to work not to do it. Knock on some wood. We have one really terrible deal where we did a deal in Nevada called Flower One, and that's been a disaster. That's well disclosed on our part. But fortunately, we only have $3 million of exposure. We have $500 million of assets. So look, it sucks, but it's less than one. It's like 0.5% of my assets. That one's got to do something. And then besides that, we've done a really good job asking our clients to put more equity in that needed to do that to support their business, and they found it. And then we have a couple of clients that actually are making a lot of money. One client in Pennsylvania who's crushing it, 250,000 square feet of grow on a low end producer, former tomato farmer. And he's printing so much cash, he's paying us off in a cash flow sweep, which sucks. It's our best one. And then Ohio's making lots of money. So we're in Missouri, we're very excited about. But remember, Missouri is going to be bad for Illinois. If you have investments in Illinois, good luck to you. Illinois is going to be the next state to drop and fall in 2023. Okay,
why? You can just like run past that one. why is
Illinois where all the big MSOs started? It is a very mature market. It is a great market. It is flat. Illinois gets 30% of their customers from across the border. 20% come out of Missouri. Missouri is wreck. Missouri is cheaper taxes. Missouri has very, very good players in it. And I say very, very underlined. We're talking about billionaire families that have scooped up a lot of the dispensaries and grow. They're going to come out with a lot of great product. They are targeting those Illinois dispensaries on the border, at one of which does over $50 million, for example, that I know of, that I know one 15 minutes away that's targeting it. As soon as that goes wreck and turns on in a few months, Illinois will lose 20% of its revenue. In fact, I think it's the opposite will happen. People from Illinois will go into Missouri to buy weed because it'll be cheaper and it's 15 minutes away. So that decrease in demand of 20% on a flat state will crush prices. Mm-hmm. And so that is the next big problem will be in Illinois. And we're a lot of the big providers. So we're not invested. We're not going to. Yes, we are. We're very small invested. We have a $5.6 million loan to actually a pretty good company in Illinois. But besides that, we're not in Illinois. But we are very heavily in Missouri, and we're excited about, you know, the prospects there. So there are some bright spots.
Got two questions for you to close off. One is you're talking a lot about investing in plant touching businesses. Do you look at non-plant touching at all? What is your interest there? Do you see any potential? Do you see any future? If so, which subsectors?
Wow. You're reading my last transcript, baby. That's a really good question. I didn't expect to go there. Yes, we opened up our mandate outside of cannabis to do non-plant touching. So what are we really do? We're hard money lenders to cannabis, right? Because there's no banks in there. There's no, right? Our average yield is 20%. That's not a bank yield, right? That's a pretty exciting, you know, yield. It comes with risk. You're investing in cannabis companies and cannabis operators. But the good news is we think we're pretty good at picking the right teams and picking the right companies. But if you look at this weird environment, real estate, hard money lending, normal real estate, buildings, shopping malls, stuff like that, right? Is now in the mid-teens in terms of pricing. So you can go, you don't need cannabis. You can do hard money lending, really amazing rates, really amazing rates, because construction loans, and you have a lot of issues with housing prices and all sorts of, and capital at the banks. Look what the bank index, the KRGB bank index has done in the past 2 months. And we were short as a family office, but the banks are begging for deposits. The liquidity is draining from the system. And that's causing normal banks, forget cannabis for a second, banks to pull back. And so we're now finding a ton of opportunity in hard money real estate, which is what we really do in cannabis, right? And but reported to nothing to do with cannabis real estate. So I think for our REIT, I'm pretty excited. There's a lot of opportunity across all of real estate to invest.
Super interesting, and definitely not what I was expecting here. Last one is very lighthearted, but I was reminded because of your discussion, East Coast versus West Coast, the importance of California. And earlier today, I got in a discussion on social media because why not? Someone very, very well known in the industry posted saying, California is the cannabis industry. If your brand is not recognized in California, you're just local. I was like, you're way off there. I mean, I understand the point. I see why California is a trendsetter. But is it the only place that makes you a real cannabis brand? What is your response to that? California is the cannabis industry. If your brand is not recognized in California, you're just local.
That's a great question. That's not that lighthearted. That's a real question.
I agree with Lynn on this one, Javi. I don't know where the lightheartedness is there.
I don't see any lighthearted part of it. Okay, so forget about brand for 1 second. Let's talk about genetics. Genetics are critical to any good brand. If you're not dropping a great product with great genetics, come on, all you cannabis lovers out there that smoke like we do and that really love the not only try new things, but more importantly, the blends get better, the feeling gets better. The terpenes and the terpene mixes, if you're gonna go that way, you know, it's so critical to get the genetics right. And there's very few, there's a couple of them, right? You've compound genetics, you've got what's the seed, like the ones Cookies uses, and there's some TRP. Very good, what's that?
TRP.
Yeah, TRP is good. Like there's a couple of really good shops, right? There's a couple of people that crossbreed and do their own stuff. So the brands are piggybacking on the top genetics, and the top genetics are coming out of California right now. So I'm gonna say that the person could be right if you link it all the way back. What I will say is brands are forming outside of California that are doing really, really well. But the legacy OG brands, right, are there. Whether you know, and it started with Burner, right? But also even expanding to Cheech and Chong and others, right? It's all still centered around California. But there's very few brands that I believe still are infinitely sustainable, right? There's just, we're looking at brands to invest in. Cookies is an obvious one, right? The Cookies repeat customer isn't as strong as the initial customer, but it still is an amazing, amazing brand. There are other ones forming. And so watch out. If they need marketing, they need the right people behind them. But they're coming out.
I had Can for the first time last month. It was incredible. Like, it was delicious. It was easy to drink. It was, you know, it was an easy replacement for any hard seltzer in the alcohol market. And things like that, I mean, God, I wish I could get Can in North Carolina. North Carolina is going to be like the last state to legalize. So I'll call you guys in 20 years. That being said, Lynn, I know we're out of time here, my friend. Thank you for being with us. Any last words for the audience? I know we're going to be back in 2023, ideally with much better news than we anticipate, but we'll see, my friend.
I think everybody have a happy new year, and, 2023 at some point, hopefully cannabis 3.0 rolls around and we'll have a lot to talk about But cannabis is here to stay. Look, it's a great industry. It's a great growing industry with lots. It's not going anywhere. It's just, and you know, everybody says, okay, there'll just be new guys and new money and new things, and it's all going to happen again. Mm-hmm. And so, well, there'll be plenty to talk about in 2023, and you guys are great covering it, and you cover it with a good personality. So keep up the energy. I want to see you end the show with a lot of energy. Like,
let's do it.
Let's end the year. Let's end the year, you know, with a lot of energy. So thank you all. And thanks. Yes. It's always great seeing you.
Thanks, Lynn. You as well, man. Thank you for your time. We'll see you soon.
Definitely.
Awesome. Always a good interview. He's always a good interview.
That was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so important right now, like where lending is going in the space. And obviously, you know, we'll see what happens in 2023, but you just heard it from the man himself, Lynn Tannenbaum. From AFCG. Javier, we're coming to the end of the show, my friend. The end of 2022.
I got goosebumps. I was not prepared for this to be the last show. I don't know.
Of 2022. We're packing like 3 weeks. Everybody calm down. Yeah, but that being said, how about this? Javi's gone for the first few weeks. However, when you come back in mid-January, we're going to start a steady stream of product reviews with Javier Jaste.
I love that. I have a question for you. Looking back at 2022, global cannabis industry, what was to you one of, like, if you had to pick one very significant move, one very significant occurrence, piece of news?
I mean, there's several that you can point to. You can point to, I link these two together just because I think it actively shows the state of the industry in M&A in 2022 is Cresco and Columbia Care, and then another one falling apart in Verano and Goodness Growth. And it's this weird dichotomy of you straining from sentiment. You're building this industry. It's happening. It's under your feet. And then there's this other pillar that continues to fall down, holding the other side of cannabis up. And you're like, nope, got to build that side up. And as you're building that side up, this side falls down. So it's just, to me, like 2022 has been a dichotomy of ups and downs. I've used dichotomy like 20 times in this show, and I'm so sorry for that.
No, this is a great reflection too, dude. I love it. I sucker punch you with this one, Aaron.
So yeah, I was not prepared for this question, but I just feel like, you know, and honestly, part of this is the last press release from Fiore Cannabis. If you guys saw that one, the very last sentence of the press release was, the C-suite has resigned and all employees have been let go, period. That was it. That was the last sentence of their last press release. And I'm like, oh, man, I really don't want this to be a sign of times to come. But again, I think you're going to see some really negative stuff. But on the other end of that, this industry continues to get better and better and better. You know, the tech is innovating. You have people like Lynn who are finding cool companies, you know, and building them up and helping them succeed. You have, you know, politicians getting more on board. More and more politicians are jumping on the train. Like, I mean, more now than ever, even though Mitch McConnell and Schumer, I'm going to say it again, they're still in a measuring contest. And they probably will be until those two old guys just go away. But that being said, I'm excited for 2023 and where we're going next. We have an exciting, you know, cannabis schedule for Benzinga. And we already have 40 companies.
The awards, dude. We're doing Benzinga Cannabis Awards next year as well. And as you were mentioning some of these things, I'm like, dude, who will get the most innovative tech award? Who will get the Friend of the Industry Award? Will the Friends of the Industry next year in the political world be the same as we thought they were this year?
I hope there's new ones. I do. I mean, Nancy Mace, awesome. Dave Joyce, awesome. Cory Booker, Schumer, and McConnell, reserve comment. but they're, you know, Perlmutter, awesome, right? There are these people that are awesome, you know, but the... we'll see. We'll see about that Friend of the Industry. That being said, you know, honestly, guys, bzcannabis.com, we talk about this industry could be going through a lot of hardships, but if you're going to succeed in this industry, you still need to be in it. You still need to participate in it. You still need to be there networking with other decision makers, making partnerships, being in front of them. You get more networking done at events than you do in the whole year not being at events. I promise you that. We already have 50 companies just signed on yesterday. The CEO of Kronos Group will be joining us for the first time in April in Miami. So, I mean, we have some awesome executives coming on board, and I'm pumped for 2023 and where Benzinga is going, and where Javier Hasse is going, where Aaron Thomas is going, where I'm going, and where our audience is coming with us, y'all. But I want to put out a question or an ask to the audience over the next 2 weeks. Email us, cannabishour@benzinga.com. Email us what you want to hear about, how you want cannabis covered, what cannabis content you want, y'all, and we want to hear from you. So that's my ask to the audience here today. I want 200 emails by the end of the week.
Love that.
All right, Javi, I just talked a lot, man. Anything else from you, brother?
Not really. Benzinga.com/cannabis to get your daily dose of cannabis news. Just, you know, subscribe to our newsletters. I would love, Aaron, are you still there? Come say hi, dude. It's our last show of the year.
Everybody, give Aaron, give producer AT a what up. Give this man a what up. He is the man behind the scenes.
You got to come on screen.
All right. I'll come on for a little bit.
Hey, there he is. That's our office behind him.
What's up, everybody?
All right, y'all. This is the man. Give him some love. Show AT some love in the chat. Donate to his crowdfunding for a razor.
Hey, yeah. I'll take it.
Apparently, we all need one here. Grown Folks 502 Music. Yeah, I got to ask, Grown Folks 502, is 502 Kentucky? Or is that an area code? What is 502? Drop your answer in the chat. I'm super interested there. But AT, appreciate all you do. Anything you want to say, man? Anything fun?
Great year. Lot of interviews down, a lot of executives talked to and discussed a lot of various topics, but important topics. And I'm very excited for what 2023 holds for this show.
Awesome. AT, Javier Hasse, Blind Chater, Grown Folks. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate everybody. We'll see you guys again January 3rd. Till then, have a happy holiday season.
See everyone. Peace.